I'm going to try to be very sensitive to time this morning. I know a lot of y'all were heading to the lake and headed to St. Augustine, Nick. Is that where y'all rolling on this? Man, y'all have an awesome trip. Love you guys. Y'all be safe traveling. Text me and I'll give you some restaurants to go to, okay? Yeah, I'll hook you up. Amen. I love our corporate time, but I absolutely love family time too. I think we just need to have a healthy balance of things in our life. But anyway, I know some of you guys are headed out to lake and different things as soon as we get through, so I'll try to be sensitive. We got a crew from Macon coming up and hosting a bunch of people this evening, so we've got a busy afternoon as well. But I want us to – I'm real excited about this word this morning, and I pray that you really be attentive to the word. And go back and listen to the podcast. I really encourage you to do that. One thing that I found in the people that I listen to with the podcast and all of that is I'll go back and I'll listen and I'll re-listen and I'll re-listen again. And it takes every time I listen to it again, God hits another layer with me. And so I want us to fully soak and saturate in the Word. When I cook cedar plank salmon and, you know, cause I love that smoky flavor and all that stuff and all that, but I can't just pour water on the cedar planks and then cook it cause it'll catch on fire. I have to soak it for hours so that it'll saturate and get into the wood to keep it from burning up. But to give it the thing and man, we just got to learn to meditate and to soak in the Lord, soak in the presence of the Lord, soak in the word of the Lord. Mary, if you'll get that now, hun, you'll be leaps and bounds ahead of the curve. Man, just learn to soak in his presence. Learn to soak in worship. That's huge with me. But also his word, man. Just soak in it and just go back to it and listen to, find some people that, man, really feed you with podcasts and all of that stuff besides just this house. And let it just, man, just saturate you. That's what he tells Joshua. He said, man, just put it in. Don't go away from it. It's Memorial Weekend. I love Memorial Weekend because of what it represents, and I don't want to, please hear me, I'm not trying to minimize anything. Memorial Weekend is basically, it's a holiday where we recognize those in the armed services that have given their life for our country and for our freedom. And amen, yes, 1,000%. 1,000%. But today I want to, the Lord carried me on a little different twist on the two memorials in the book of Joshua. And I also want to recognize not only those that gave their life, that shed their blood and died for our freedom, as significant as it is, I also want to honor and recognize those that have helped us along the way that didn't die. They're still doing that. There's some 3-star, 4-star generals sitting in the Pentagon right now that have given their life to the liberty of the United States. And those guys are significant, just as significant as the guy that died on the front wave at D-Day. And the Lord has me today looking. We always, you know, we'll do the spin on our religious freedom and our spiritual freedom, and we should. But today the Lord has me really looking and focusing at not the two memorials that we see in Joshua as the children of Israel going into the promised land, but the people that are behind the two memorials, okay? Because I think that we should be able to relate very much to these people in the sense that what am I doing in my life? What am I doing with my life? And how am I relating to others in my life? And so I want us to come in and to celebrate Memorial Weekend for, yes, everything that it is, everything that it signifies from a national standpoint, from a freedom standpoint. Please don't, when you hear me say, you know, I said this last Sunday, and I don't mean to offend anybody in this at all. Please do not hear when I say that I'm a citizen of the world, that I am minimizing the United States of America. I'm just simply saying God is bigger than the United States of America. And one error of the church, I feel like, is that we come in and we've reduced God down to the size of America and even a political party. And I see people that are so wrecked because Trump didn't get elected, and in their minds they stole the election and all this stuff, and it just so discombobulated them and all that. And I'm like, look, man, Jesus is still on the throne. You know, my hope isn't hinging on four states getting overturned and him, you know, being in the White House. I mean, if, you know, the prophetic people and all that stuff, if that happens, man, good, I'm down with it. But Jesus is on the throne regardless. And God's moving in the world in a broader scope than just a national holiday and a national thing. Do I think America is big in the plan of God? Absolutely. I think our country was founded on religious freedom. I think our nation is a Christian nation. I find offense to anybody that does not feel that our nation is a Christian nation. We were founded as a Christian nation. Like it, lump it, otherwise. Okay? The Arab nations are founded as Muslim nations. It doesn't offend me that they were founded as Muslim nations, but we were founded as a Christian nation. But with that being said, God's a lot bigger than America. And so I want us to have a bigger mindset and more of a global mindset in things, in how we do life and how we view life and how we view the inheritance that God has for his people out there. So I'm really not sure why I went on that little rant, but I want us to look at the people that are behind these two memorials that we see in Joshua, and I'm really going to come at it from that slant. So let's read the verses. I've got several verses I want to read, so hang in there with me. I'm going to go through it fairly quickly. You always, as a minister, you always try to figure out, am I just going to read through all of it and then go back, or I'm going to kind of hit it on the way? And it's a struggle, isn't it, James, where it's like, oh, man, I just need to read all 24 verses, or as I get to stuff, talk about stuff. So we'll see how it goes. Verse 1, we are in the King James version of the Bible. And it says, it just giving everybody, I feel comfortable that all you guys know the setting, but maybe people that are listening to podcast or will listen to it later on or the live stream, maybe years down the road, don't know these things. But we're in a setting where the children of Israel have been brought out of Egypt. After 400 years of captivity and bondage, God brought them out of Egypt. They came to a place at Kadesh Barnea where they sent spies into the promised land. It was the land that God had promised Abraham. We can't get away from that. This is their inheritance. This is their inheritance. A lot of people struggle in life because they never figure out what their inheritance is, and their inheritance mindset is very, very small. You should go through life wide with eyes wide open looking and say, God, what do you have for me? And that's not a selfish, greedy thing, but what do you have as my inheritance for me to redeem and to operate in and to use it to help change the world? Okay? And the children of Israel, God brought them to a place. They sent 12 spies into the promised land, the land that God had promised Abraham, the land that God had promised Isaac, the land that God had promised Jacob. And they sent them in. We just real quickly, we know the story, or perhaps you don't. 10 of the spies came back, and they gave a negative report. They said, the land is everything that you said it was. It is amazing. They brought back fruit of the land. I always talk about them bringing back the grapes of Eshcol on a staff between two men, like we would carry a deer out of the woods. They brought these huge the fruit of the land, and they said, the land is everything that you said it was. You did not lie, God. But then they came in right on the tail end and said, but it's going to be too hard. And I see a lot of Christians in life, and they punt and they quit because it just gets too hard for them. And that's what Sister Lori was alluding to. They get weary, and they get things that dull the blade. Sermon I preached 20 years ago, and it just has always stuck with me. The things that dull the blade, you know, usually it's not the stump that we hit with our lawnmower, but after all the pebbles and all the sand and all the dust and all of the stuff, eventually the blade gets so dull it just can't do its job. And they said it was too hard. And two of the spies, Joshua and Caleb, they said, no, man, we can take it. There's walled cities, there's giants, these people are fierce, but it's our inheritance, so God has it set aside for us. Long story short, the people followed the 10 people, the huge amount of people in Israel. Estimates are between 600,000 and 6 million Jews came out of Egypt. 600,000 and 6 million. That's how many people they were leading. And so they said, no, we're not able. And so God was like, okay, you don't want to walk in your inheritance, you'll die in the wilderness. I'll provide for you. I will give you clothing. I will give you, I'll keep your clothing from wearing out. I'll give you food. I will protect you from your enemies. All of these things. You're going to live a supernatural lifestyle here, but it's going to be way less than what you were supposed to live in. And yeah, we could go there and preach a while on that. And I'm gonna hit on this in just a minute. But they lived a supernatural life for 40 years, but they still died in the wilderness, not going into their land that God had promised for them. The cool thing about it was God didn't forget the people of Israel, and he said, that's fine, I'll kill this generation off and I'll bring in the next generation. I've always said I don't want their generation to walk in what I'm supposed to walk in. That's one problem that I have. I've heard it my whole life, and any of you that have been in church for any period of time have heard this your whole life too, is, boy, God's going to do something in the next generation. Tip, you've been hearing it since you were that next generation, right? And now you hear it, and you're like, I'm believing it for Zion and Isabel and all of that stuff. I get tired of the church kicking the can down the road, personally. My kids are going to do it. My grandkids are going to do it. The next generation, God's about to. I got news for you guys. God's moving right now if you want to get on board. Revival's happening right now if you want to get on board. People are like, I ain't feeling it, man. It just ain't like it used to be. It's not supposed to like it to be like it used to be. It's supposed to be different and new, and God carrying you into new places. And I get tired of us kicking the can down the road, and I refuse to default a field that I am supposed to flourish in to my grandchildren's generation. I want to set them up for success in that field, but I want that field to be ready when they step into that field. I don't want to put that onus on you, Brett. Well, man, Brett's got me. He's going to do it. He's going to carry it, and I'm just going, you know, I'm through and all that stuff. I ain't done. I'm not done in life. I'm not done with life. I'm not done with chasing after what God has for me and what God has for us. And so God wants to incorporate all of us in this thing. And one generation said no, so the next generation stepped into it. The issue with this is all this generation knew was a slave mentality. And so God had to break that off of them. God had to get that slave mentality, that get-by mentality out of them. And one of the two spies was Joshua, the other was Caleb. And when Moses died, Joshua became the leader of the children of Israel. And so after 40 years of that generation dying off, wandering in the wilderness, God brings them back to the brink of the promised land. And he said, now are y'all ready to enter into your inheritance? And thankfully, this generation said, yes, absolutely. And so that's where we are. They are about to cross over into God's inheritance for them. They're about to cross over into what he had set aside for them from the foundations of the earth. And understand this, guys. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, God had promises laid out for these very people that they were going to walk in. And I just want you to know, man, God has got promises. I got messed up this morning reading Deuteronomy 33. And you know what it was? It was Moses' prayer blessing over the two tribes that came out of Joseph. Read that. It's like Deuteronomy 13, verses 14 through 16. Y'all read that. It so trashed me. Because he was talking about he was speaking to the heavens and the dew blessing their land and the fountains of the deep coming up and watering their land and blessing their land. It was talking about the majestic mountains releasing their stuff into these people. The hills release. I'm sitting here saying, man, what do the mountains have to release into them? He was talking about the sun providing its bounty in the crops and all of that. And he's even declaring the moon is going to bring its produce into them. I'm like, what does the moon produce? I'm going to have to do some scientific study now. But all of it goes to God promised this and declared this for people hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And I want to tell you something, guys. God has inheritance set aside for us that we are supposed to partner with him and redeem that he has had set aside from the foundations of the earth. And it's got Marty Smith's name on it. And it's like, what will you choose to walk in? And this generation finally said, man, we're in. Okay, we're in. But now let me show you some stuff that was required and took place, had to happen for them to walk in and to eventually inherit this land and live in this land. And we're looking at two memorials. I think it's very fitting. It's Memorial Day. I preached on these two memorials, I think, last April, April 2020, in the midst of the COVID stuff. And I was looking at some notes. I'm going in a total different direction this morning, but just some real significant. Let's start in verse 1. And it came to pass, when all the people were clean, passed over Jordan, that the Lord spake unto Joshua, saying, take you 12 men out of the people, out of every tribe of man, and command you them, saying, take you hence out of the midst of Jordan, out of the place where the priest's feet stood firm, 12 stones, and you shall carry them over with you, and leave them in the lodging place where you shall lodge this night. Then Joshua called the 12 men whom he had prepared of the children of Israel, out of every tribe of man. I like that. I just made a few notes on this. I can't resist right here. Verse 4, I made a note in there and said, will the Lord choose us to be a standard bearer? Out of all of these people, out of all of these 600,000, out of all of these let's just say 600,000 people, they chose one man out of every tribe. What caused that one man to be chosen? Will I position myself in such a way with purity of heart? Will I position myself in such a way with purity of motive? Will I position myself in such a way for passion for Him and passion for His people that I'll get the call on some of this stuff? Or do you duck in the crowd and say, don't call me, Lord? Cindy, do we live such a life that the Lord will come out and say, man, Don't even go there that consider my servant Job. Because we don't want the consequences that come with that. But with the choosing comes, the word says he who is given much is required. But if we want to be significant, and if we want to have an impact, if we want a choosing to take place in our life, and a choosing to take place in our marriage, in our home, in our generation, in our children, if we want the Lord's name to be great through us, where people can look at all the generations of Abraham, and all the generations of Marty and Krista, and all the generations of Sid and Lori, and all the generations of Cindy Hardy, and all of this stuff, that there has to be a choosing that takes place. But with that choosing comes this huge, huge, huge responsibility. And the question is, do we shrink back and do we hide from it? Do we want to just kind of be part of the crowd? Do we want to be part of the huddle masses? Or do we want to say, here am I, choose me, Lord. Here am I, send me. I love the thing of in Isaiah when he comes and he cleanses him in Isaiah chapter 6. He says, who can I send and who will go? He's like, here am I, send me, Lord. And so he goes out and he chooses these 12 guys. And I'll give you details on actually what's taking place in just a minute. In verse 5, and Joshua said unto them, pass over before the ark of the Lord your God into the midst of Jordan, and take you up every man of you a stone upon his shoulder according unto the number of the tribes of the children of Israel. Verse 6, that this may be a sign among you, that when your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what mean ye by these stones? Just one more quick note before we go through these rest of these verses. I put in there, I said, will our children ask us about our faith? Is your life significant enough in your faith journey, in your faith life, that your children want to know why my mama does the things she does and why does my mama live the way she lives? Our lives should be so significant that our kids and our grandkids see something different in us that they don't see in the world, and it ought to so pique their interest that they want to know what's my grandmama all about? What's my papa all about? what's my father all about, and what's my mother all about, and why do they do the things they do, and why do they live the way that they live, and why are they passionate about the things that they're passionate about, and why do they honor the way that they honor, and why do they host the way that they host, and why do they do these things, and if we're not living the life that our kids are even vaguely interested. I see so many people, and I try not to judge, but I see so many people, and it's like their kids run the other way as soon as they can. Because it's almost like they're saying, if that's what marriage is like, count me out. If that's what home is supposed to be like, count me out. If that's what Christianity is supposed to be like, if that's what church life is supposed to be like, then count me out. And man, I want our kids to say, that's what I want. I want what my mom and daddy have and the love they have for each other. I want what my mom and daddy have and the passion that they have for each other. I want the heart for people like my mom and daddy have. I want the adventurous spirit like my mom and daddy have. I want to have that. And they come in and they say, what is it about this? There should be such a that's just who they are. That's what we talked about last week. That's just the way they are. I think that was the phrase, wasn't it, James? That's just the way they are. That's just the way they are. They say, what is it? And he said, you do this, and then when your children, he didn't say if, he said, when your children ask you the meaning of these things. The word tells us in one place, it says, when the world comes to you and asks you for the reason of your hope, you'll be able to give them a significant answer. And what's sad is when we don't live in such a way that the world is curious about the hope that we have, or the peace that we have, or the love that we have, or the joy that we have. And so he comes into this verse and he says, when they, in time to come, saying, what mean ye by these stones? Then you shall answer them, that the waters of Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it passed over Jordan, the waters of Jordan were cut off. And these stones shall be for a memorial unto the children of Israel forever. And the children of Israel did so as Joshua commanded, and took up 12 stones out of the midst of Jordan, as the Lord spake unto Joshua, according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel, and carried them over with them unto the place where they lodged, and laid them down there. And Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of Jordan, in the place where the, this is important, just make a mental note of this, we'll come back to it. And Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests which bear the ark of the covenant stood, and they are there unto this day. Verse 10, for the priests which bear the ark stood in the midst of Jordan until everything was finished that the Lord commanded Joshua to speak unto the people, according to all that Moses commanded Joshua. And the people hasted and passed over. And it came to pass, when all the people were clean passed over, that the ark of the Lord passed over, and the priest in the presence of the people. And the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh passed over armed before the children of Israel. And Moses spake unto, as Moses spake unto them, about 40,000 prepared for war passed over before the Lord unto battle to the plains of Jericho. Now, just a quick note on that. 2.5 tribes chose to stay on the east side of the Jordan River. I used to dog them out. I used to say they settled. I've heard preachers my whole life talk about how they settled. They compromised. They didn't come in and all of this stuff. And I'm backing up on that a little bit now. And we'll touch on that in just a second. But there are 2.5 tribes, because of their cattle and their flocks. They said that the east side of the Jordan is a great place to raise cattle and flocks and all of that. And Moses finally told them, he says, okay, you can do that as long as you help the others get where they're supposed to be. And so they sent 40,000 warriors, and so the 40,000 warriors went, and they crossed the Jordan River onto the west side of the Jordan River, and they helped fight, and they helped conquer the land. And sometimes you've got to be willing. We're going to hit this in a minute. Sometimes you got to be willing to fight for somebody else that maybe wants something different than what you want. And they sent 40,000. The prayer of blessing in Deuteronomy 33 that I was talking about, you know who that was falling on? The half tribe of Manasseh that was on the east side of the Jordan River. So God wasn't ticked at them. You say, well, they wasn't going into what their full inheritance was supposed to be. I may agree with you on that. But God still loved them, and God still wanted to bless them, and Moses is still declaring blessings over their life. One thing we've got to understand is everybody doesn't want what we want when we want what we want. And we've got to learn to be okay with that. One thing I found, most people don't want in life what I want in life. And it doesn't make me better, doesn't make them worse, doesn't make them better, doesn't make me worse. But I've got to understand that we're coming and there are responsibility and things that I have to do to help people along the way that aren't wanting the same thing that I'm wanting at this point in time. Because I'm going to tell you something, there's been seasons in my life where I didn't want what I want right now. And so we've got to help and encourage and all of that stuff. You know, your kids may not be fired up about school, but you know the necessity of them getting a good education. So what do? Say, he going to school today. And yeah, you're going to study algebra and you're going to study your calculus and you're going to study your trigonometry and you're going to study all these things because it'll help you down the road. And you're like, I don't like this and this stinks and all of this stuff. And say, yeah, but one day you'll be glad you did. And so we've got to learn to do that. And so they sent their 40,000 soldiers, their 40,000 warriors across the west side, to the west side of the Jordan, to help them fight on this conquest. It was going to take several years. Verse 14, on that day the Lord magnified Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they feared him as they feared Moses all the days of his life. And the Lord spake unto Joshua, saying, command the priest that bear the ark of the testimony that they come up out of Jordan. Joshua therefore commanded the priest, saying, come you up out of Jordan. And it came to pass when the priests that bear the ark of the covenant of the Lord were come up out of the midst of Jordan, and the soles of the priests' feet were lifted up onto the dry land, that the waters of Jordan returned unto their place and flowed over all his banks as they did before. Verse 19, we're going five more verses. And the people came up out of Jordan on the 10th day of the first month and encamped in Gilgal in the east border of Jericho. And those 12 stones which they took out of Jordan did Joshua pitch in Gilgal. And he spake unto the children of Israel, saying, when your children shall ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what mean these stones? Then you shall let your children know, saying, Israel came over this Jordan on dry land. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of Jordan from before you until you are passed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up from before us until we were gone over, that all the people of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord, that he is mighty, and that you might fear the Lord your God forever. All right, a lot of verses. When the children of Israel were ready to cross over into the promised land, one thing had not happened in their lives, because they had lived their life in the wilderness, and their fathers and mothers had slave mentality and did not embrace the fullness of who they were in God and all of God's promises and all these things and their identity, and they stopped circumcising the sons. And so Joshua had the wonderful task. Can you imagine being a leader? And it said Joshua circumcised him. I'm not saying that he circumcised every male that was out there, but I'm sure he had a bloody hand in it. Can you imagine saying, okay, Marty, now you got to come. We got 300,000, 400,000 guys. Let's get the knife out. We got to circumcise them. You talking about a bad job, man? That'd be a really stinky job, wouldn't it? Sometimes the junk goes with the turf. We all want it to be glorious, don't we? Where we're on stage and we got the microphone and we're playing the guitar and the house is full and everybody's energetic. It's like, Tyler, you're awesome. Woo! Now, we like that, don't we? And sometimes God says, hey, we got to circumcise everybody before we can cross. There's some stuff, some preparatory stuff that we got to do. He told the priest, he said, y'all get the ark before we cross over. Y'all get the ark and y'all kind of go through the camp with the ark. And the people start consecrating themselves because they'll remember that this thing's holy. They'll remember this thing's holy. Sometimes God just wants us to walk through the camp as a reminder to people that this thing's holy and this thing is supernatural and this thing is real and this thing is powerful and this thing, it saved your soul and it changed your life. People forget that. He didn't want them to forget the cause of what was about to happen and that Yahweh was going before them. So he says, man, y'all get the thing. Man, we're going to circumcise everybody. We've got to let everybody get healed up because ain't nobody going to be no good at fighting if we can't even walk. And so they load us up and they carry it through. And sometimes, Ariel, sometimes you got to be the person that says, you know what? Man, ain't none of these. And God says, get the ark and walk through the camp. Get the ark in your marriage and walk through the camp. You know what the ark represented? The presence of God. So let me break it down, New Testament terms. He said, you walk through the camp with the presence of God resting on your life. You walk through, because what it does is it reminds people and it gives people hope. It's not like, woo, take the dove out on my shoulder. I love what Bill Johnson says about this. He said, man, we got to walk through life with the constant recognition that the dove is resting on our shoulder. The presence of God is resting on our shoulder. Presence of God is resting in our life. And sometimes, man, we just got to walk through the camp and say, hey, guys, he's still alive. He's still on the throne. He's still supernatural. He's still moving in power. He's still moving in love. He's still moving in peace. He's still moving in blessing. He's still doing all of these things. Don't forget. Don't forget. Yeah, maybe that's part of what you were doing in Panama City last 2 weeks, Noah. Some of these kids, man, when they saw you witnessing somebody and they're out there, man, I'm getting just, you know, doing what kids do when they go to the beach on graduation, spring break, and all that. You know, we're just trying to get. Yeah. And maybe it was a reminder. They see some young college guys, not old ball-headed guys on the street corner preaching fire and brimstone, but some young, good-looking college kids, and they're out here, you know, and they're like, man, sharing their faith and talking to people. And it's a reminder. And he said, you walk through the camp, and it's a reminder to people that God is holy and God is with us and God has called us and God has chosen us. And I want to tell you, man, he has not regretted the day he chose you and he called you. If you're listening to this or you're watching on live stream, whenever it is, it might be 2025 and you're struggling with who you are. God's not forgot you and God's not abandoned you and God doesn't regret calling you one day. He doesn't regret saving you. He doesn't regret spilling his blood for you on Calvary's cross. He doesn't regret going into the depths of Hades and bringing the keys to death, hell, and the grave, leading captivity. He doesn't regret that, Brett. All the years when I was just kind of, you know, going through the motion, he didn't say, boy, man, I wish I hadn't have done that. He was like, I just need to walk through the camp. I just need to walk through the camp. If I want to be the person that just walks through the camp carrying the presence, said, hey guys, Karen, he's still alive and well. He's still, man, he's still doing it. He's still doing what he said he would do. He's still fulfilling his promises. He still wants to use us. He ain't going anywhere. And so they do this, and all the people, they start consecrating themselves. They start getting themselves in the right place spiritually, emotionally, mentally, every way, man. They come in, and they're getting clean before the Lord. They're posturing themselves clean before the Lord. And then he says, okay, now it's time. Now it's time for us to cross the Jordan River. And this was the process. The Jordan River, and it was at flood stage this time. And he comes in and he says, here's what the Lord says, do. The priest, I want you to come and I want you to take the Ark of the Covenant. And I want you to come in and I want you to wade out into the river. He actually just says, I want you to put your sole of foot on the water. When you put your sole of foot on the water, he said that God's going to allow us to cross on dry land. Now, before you think this is a crazy stretch, remember this is only one generation away from the Red Sea crossing. Their mothers and fathers told them stories about we crossed the Red Sea. We walked across on dry ground. So before you think God's doing something crazy and no way this is going to work in you, we just sang, the one line that I love in that song Rattle is just ask the man whose body was thrown on the bones of Elisha. Just ask the man whose body was thrown on the bones of Elisha. And he came back to life. And that's crazy. But it wasn't that far-fetched because they said, I know some miracles that God had done in our people before. And that's why we meditate on these things and we remember these things and we establish memorials on these things and we tell the generations about these things that I've seen God move and God is a miracle worker. He's a way maker and he's been with me and he's been with my parents. He's been with the generations. He's had his hand in our life and he'll do the same for you. You know why I'm so confident God can absolutely and God will and God desires to absolutely rock your world the rest of your life? Because he's been doing it mine for 40 years. And if I feel like I'm just getting started. And I'm like, if he will do it for me, he'll do it for Mary House. If he will do it in my marriage, he'll do it in yours. If he'll do it in my children, he'll do it in yours. If he'll do it in the way I do life, he'll do it in yours. Because I promise you, he loves you just as much as he does me. and your inheritance is just as large as mine. All you got to do is just say yes, and have a loud yes and a long yes and a continual yes. That's all we got to do. And so he tells the priests, they come out and they put their foot. Sure enough, they touch the, get this, they're bearing this ark on their shoulders. That was the only way you could carry it. That didn't work when they tried to carry it with a new ox cart, okay? So they come in, they put their feet on, whoop, sure enough, this happens. That's awesome. That's pretty easy, though. You know, the man tells you to do it. Joshua says, do it. I'm not going to, okay, yeah. Because I remember my daddy was a priest. And he told me what happened at the Red Sea. That's the easy part. You know what the hard part is? You wade out into the middle of the river and you stand there and you hold the presence of God. 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 And when you're tired, you continue to hold the presence of God until 600,000 to 6 million people cross the river. How many of y'all been to a SEC football game? I can't say an ACC football. I've been to an SEC football game. A little bit different at Tech, isn't it, Brett? You go to a Georgia game, you go to an Auburn game, you go to an Alabama game, there's 100,000 people there. Let's get on a spiritual context. We went to Promise Keepers when it first happened. There was 80,000 men. You know how long it took for 80,000 people to file out of the Georgia Dome to eat lunch? You know how long it takes you to get out of a Georgia game and get to your car? It takes a hot minute, doesn't it? Over 80,000. Can you imagine between 600,000 and 6 million people crossing a river? My point is, it was not just a real quick thing. And these priests are standing in the middle of the river while everything is taking place. You say, well, maybe they did a tag team. They may have. There may have been 24 guys rotating out, four at a time. But they were standing there for hours on end carrying the presence. My point is in this, guys, the memorial I want to talk about is not necessarily these two piles of stones. We're going to talk about the two piles of stones, but I want to talk about the people that it took for this great exodus. Or excuse me, not this great exodus. That wasn't a great exodus. This was a great rebirth for the nation of Israel to go into the promised land. And these guys stood in the river while everybody was crossing. It'd been easy for me to stand in the river while Joshua and Caleb crossed. You go get them, Caleb. Go get your mountain, boy. You've been believing big for 40 years. But what about the other folks? That maybe they weren't as passionate as you were. Maybe they weren't as committed as you were. Maybe they didn't ever want to give or serve. They never signed up for anything. My point on that is that's life. There have been times when I was not the priest holding up the presence of God, but the guy that he was holding up the presence of God for. And God is constantly reminding me, asking me, will I continue to be that guy that will shoulder the presence of the Lord, that will allow the weight of the Lord to rest on my life in order to make a way for other people? That's why the word says, be not weary in well-doing. Apostle Paul said, don't get weary in well-doing, guys. Because there's still a lot of people that have yet to cross. There's a lot of children that are yet to cross. There's a lot of people that are not as passionate that are yet to cross. Because you look at this and you say, this is your inheritance, but it's their inheritance. So there's even a group of people, there's even 40,000 warriors that are going to cross that aren't going to live here. They're wanting to live on this other side over there. And are you willing to stand in the place and make a way for them to be able to come in and do what they're supposed to do? See, our job is not just about what can I do to get out of this and how I'm going to get blessed and all of this stuff. But the thing about us, one of the great callings in our life, and the one thing I want to memorialize and I want to recognize today, is the people that are willing to stand in the river shouldering the presence of God so that everybody can pass. Because that's not easy. And truth be known, they're the people when they're passing, they're really not looking at the priest. They're looking up at the ark. See, that's the thing about you got it on your shoulder, but the ark is above you. So when they're walking by, if I'm walking by, I'm going through this river and I see this thing and it's pushed back and the waters are just standing on edge. And I'm sitting here and I'm looking at the Ark of the Covenant and I'm like, wow, man, God, you're amazing. Yahweh, you are amazing. I don't even see Marty Smith standing there. I say, Yahweh, you're amazing. And you got to be okay with that. Not only be okay with that, but that's got to be the greatest honor of your life. Come on, somebody. I'm doing my thing, and it's easy to put your foot in a river and watch it jump back. Anybody can do that. But not anybody's willing to stand in the river for the whole procession. And God's asking us if we'll be a people that'll stand in the river for the whole procession. That's what he's asking. Will we be those people? I just see some of them kids coming up to their dad later on and say, Dad, you held that ark all day long. How'd you do that? You see a little kid getting out on the bank on the other side saying, that's my daddy over holding that Ark of the Covenant. That's my daddy over there. He's a priest holding the ark. You talking about identity being birthed in a child? Come on, somebody. Man, this ain't about, what's my reward on this? That is your reward on this. Is it 6 million people crossed a river and you are a part in making that happen? That's why y'all get up here every Sunday worship team. Yeah, you're worshiping the Lord. Yes, you're blessing Him. Yes, you're ministering to Him. But you're also making a way for people. You're also making a way for this old 59-year-old bald-headed preacher man just to come down into the presence of the Lord and just so dig the corporate worship. Don't ever get tired of that. Don't ever get weary of that. Don't ever get weary of that on the soundboard, Amber. Don't ever get weary of that on the computer, Karen. Jeffrey in the back. Poor Jeffrey's got stuck. Him and Tammy got stuck in the back ever since we started live streaming. They've been in Errol's office running a little thing. Isaac gets drug in there sometimes, and Marvin and some different people helping out. Thankful to all of them, Luke. Thankful to all of them. But what you're doing is just as important as me with this in my hand right here, guys. And so I see these 12 priests, and they're coming in, and they're standing there the whole time. And then all the people are coming through, and they're crossing over, and there's 12 men that have been chosen, 12 men that we referred to a while ago, and they got called out. And he said, I want y'all to take a rock out of the riverbed. And I believe it's a significant stone, because he said, you'll have to carry it on your shoulder. But he said, I want you to take a rock out of the riverbed, and I want you to carry it to the camp where we will stay. And we're going to make an altar there. So there were 12 guys. You got the priest. Look at this picture. You got the priests that are holding the presence of God, and they're standing in this whole duration of this, and they're doing this. And then you got these 12 guys, and I believe this rock was so significant. They built an altar out of it, so it's pretty doggone significant out of 12 of them. And these guys, they can't be concerned about their stuff. They got to trust that their stuff's going to make it. They're not concerned about, what about mine? They're saying, the Lord told me to get a stone out of the bed of the Jordan River. And so they pick this rock up and they carry it to Gilgal. Gilgal was between 6 and 8 miles from where they crossed the Jordan River. So these guys, you can imagine doing a hike. It wasn't a mountainous hike, but it was a flat hike. But still, you can imagine carrying a huge stone on your shoulder for 6 to 8 miles, Brett. That's pretty laborious in itself. But these guys had one job, and you know what that one job was? To carry this memorial stone. And they had to trust that somebody else would be, that God was going to make a way for their stuff to get there. Because we'd be like, man, who's going to bring my stuff? I got to take care of my family. I can't carry a rock for everybody else. I got to take care of my family. That kind of comes against the me-ism of the American church today, right? Or the American culture today. And God's like, if you'll carry that stone, I'll make sure your stuff gets there. The guide, you know, in Peru, I was talking about the guide was saying, man, y'all just follow me on this little narrow edge, you know, and I'm literally, it's like this, you know, and I'm sitting there saying, man, this is kind of snappy right here, you know. He said, don't worry, the stuff will come. The horses will come. They'll follow. They ain't going to be dragging them, leading them. Holy Spirit's going to lead, and he's going to bring the rest of the stuff with him. And here's the thing. We talk about a memorial, not only for the guy that carried the stone on his shoulder, but the guy that said, you know what, you carry the rock, and I'll help carry your stuff. Sometimes you're not even the guy carrying the rock. Sometimes you're the guy that's carrying the guy that's carrying the rock stuff. Are y'all cool with that? Ain't glamorous, is it? Don't nobody say, man, did you see Brett Kent carry that rock 6 miles? No, he wasn't carrying the rock. He was carrying Rhett's stuff because Rhett was carrying the rock. Who's going to get all the accolades? Rhett. Rhett carried that rock. Thank you, man. Awesome. Brett was carrying Rhett's stuff. Or his wife was carrying the load. Come on, somebody. Don't be weary and well doing. Sometimes when God has got your spouse doing this or doing this or doing this, you know what they need? We just talked about Jonathan and his armor bearer a couple weeks ago, didn't we? Yes, sir. Thank God for the armor bearer. Said, do whatever's in your heart. I'm with you. Do what's in your heart. Trust in somebody else. Following somebody else's heart. Following somebody else's heart. You know, all I'm doing, I'm just following your heart. Y'all's heart and behind yours. That's all we're doing. I don't have an agenda and a plan and all that. I've tried to throw in some wisdom and hear the Lord on some stuff. But at the end of the day, you know all Scott was doing last week when he was down there? He was following Marty and Krista's heart. He said, you just do what's in your heart. I'm with you. Me and Scott's had this conversation, man. That's all God's called us to do, man. Just whatever's in their heart, we're going to just help support. We're just going to help do it. We're going to help facilitate it. God's called us. We're just going to help facilitate it. Whatever's in your heart. You carry the rock, I'll carry your stuff. You carry the rock, I'll carry. We got to go 6 miles. Okay. You know what would have been easy? Let's carry it over here and let's drop it on the riverbank. When everybody gets across, everybody look back. You see that rock? Woo, that was good. Now let's go. He said, you ain't leaving it there. We ain't building a memorial there. You know where we're carrying the memorial to? To the place we're going to live. We're going to the camp with it. Here's the thing, guys. We can't drop it at the convenient spot. We can't even drop it at the place we think is the place of breakthrough. We got to carry it home with us. You know what Gilgal was? Gilgal was not where they spent that night. Gilgal was their base of operations for the whole conquest stage. That's where they based everything out of, was Gilgal. Everything was based out of Gilgal. And so you know what that meant? When they carried those 12 stones and Joshua built an altar there out of those 12 stones, every time you came into camp, you know what you saw? Altar. 12 stones. You know what that reminded you of? God's faithfulness. God's goodness. God's provision. God's vision. God's inheritance. God's dreams. Every time you came in camp, constant reminder, man. It's low. Yes. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Holy Father. Thank you, Holy Spirit. Constant reminder. Constant thing. But it's not there if nobody's willing to carry the stone. Are you willing to carry the stone, Brett? We make this real personal right here. You say, well, somebody else will carry the stone. What if God chooses you to carry the stone? I take it real personal, guys. I take being patriarch of our family real personal. I take it real personal. I'm not going to kick that can down the road. There'll be a day where they're patriarchs. They're the patriarch of their household. But I'm talking about our clan. All right? They'll be, but I take it real personal to carry that stone and put it in camp where everybody can see it and nobody can forget it. I want my life to be so steady. I want my life to be so consistent. I want my life to be so enduring that there is never a day where somebody can't look and see a stone. I see it. I don't agree with something he did. Don't agree with something. I heard him say this. I saw him do this. Golly, but there's a stone. A stone. I know you only agree with me 99% of the time, Cindy. But even that 1% of time, you can always see a stone. You can always see a stone. My children, my grandchildren can always see a stone. These guys carried it 6 to 8 miles on their shoulder to the place they were staying. And they trusted somebody else is going to carry their stuff. We've all got different roles in this at different places in our life. Sometimes I'm the dude carrying the rock, and sometimes I'm the dude carrying the stuff. And I'm good with both of them. I'm good with both of them. You need to learn to be good with both of them. Because when you're the guy carrying the stuff, you ain't getting the credit. But you're helping facilitate getting the stone carried. Then something else happened. Was Joshua walked out in the riverbed after all these people had crossed over. All of these people, and the word says that they were standing on the banks and they were watching Joshua. And Joshua goes in. And beautiful type of Christ in this. It's a type of death, burial, resurrection, type of baptism. And Joshua comes in and he takes 12 stones and he builds an altar in the middle of the dry riverbed. While the water is held back, while the priests are standing there and all the people have already passed over, and he comes back and he says, I'm going to make a memorial. And this memorial is what God has done. See, I look at these two memorials, and in my mind, I was meditating on these two memorials yesterday. And in my mind, the memorial that went in the middle of the river is what God has done, but the memorial that was getting carried to the camp is the memorial of who we're going to be in God. One was past and one was present. One was future. The present and future slid together. It's a constant moving thing. And I want to tell you something. Both are significant. And one thing that we fail to do, one thing that I find a delay sometimes with me, is I'll come in and I'll stop and I'll be like, oh man, Lord, I've got a grateful heart. But I'll stop and say, God, that was amazing, and thank you so much, and you and build a memorial right there. And not just a memorial that I can see, but build a memorial somebody else can see. And it's a memorial from the past, for the past, of what God's done. But the thing that I like about this is Joshua did it all by himself. Very symbolic, because he was a symbol of Christ. He was, if you want to get into symbolism, he was the leader of the children of Israel. But you got the priest standing in there, and they're holding the ark, and they're looking at, they're watching Joshua. And they're probably saying, man, my shoulder's really tired, and my back's killing me, and all of this stuff. But they're saying, man, maybe they weren't. Maybe they were just so right up here in such a mighty, awesome place that they're like. But all of these people are on the riverbank, and Joshua said, we can't move forward until I honor God for what he did. And sometimes we got these little private memorials that we build between us and the Lord, but sometimes it's so, so important for us to build a memorial of what God's done in our life so that everybody can see, because we're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses. And that is a multifaceted statement, that we're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses. And I would be totally, totally, totally in error if I didn't come back and build these altars for not only for my personal and not only for my family, but for the world to see and say, this is what God did. This is what the Lord did. This is what the Lord did. This is what the Lord did. And then the waters covered it up. But just a couple questions out of this, and I'm wrapping this all up real quickly. We could talk about this. We could do a life group study out of this for 10 weeks, I promise. There's a time when you're not going to have the masses with you. Joshua built the altar by himself. You've got to be so at a place in your life where you say, if nobody else does, I will. I'm willing to go it alone. I'm willing to do it alone. I'm willing to stand alone. I'm willing to praise alone. I'm willing to worship alone. I'm willing to dance alone. I'm willing to give alone. I'm willing to serve alone. I'm willing to do whatever. I'm not going to stop doing what I'm doing and what God's called me to be, even though nobody else seems like nobody else is with me. I'm going to keep doing it. And Joshua told, or God told Joshua, he said, you go build that altar by yourself. And we have got to be in such a place of relationship and such a place of thankfulness and such a place of identity rep that we're like, I'll do it myself if I have to. I'm going to do it. It's not going to dissuade me from doing what God has put in my heart and spoke into my ear for me to do. It's great if everybody joins me. I think sometimes there's things that you can only do alone. Sometimes there's things you can only do alone. God designed it that way. Sometimes there's things that 12 others will help you do. Sometimes there's things that the whole team will get on board with. But I look at these people and I just see awesome acts of faith and awesome acts of obedience and awesome acts of selflessness. Here's the thing that strikes me on this, guys, bringing it into to everyday. We talked about the 40,000. You know, like I say, I used to dog those 2.5 tribes out that stayed on the other side of, on the east side of Jordan, and be like, man, they're compromisers and da-da-da-da-da and all of that. You know, that was good preaching, I guess. Tell everybody don't be a compromiser. It's an easy sermon to preach, right, Brett? We can do that. You know, as preachers, we... Because I'd heard it preached like that my whole life. But those 40,000 went and fought somebody else's fight so somebody else could enter into their inheritance. And I have to ask myself the question, am I willing to fight to help somebody else fight their fight so they can enter into their inheritance? They had already found their inheritance on the east side of Jordan. Moses had already blessed them in them staying in that inheritance, but he blessed them with the condition that the only way you'll be able to enjoy the freedom of your inheritance is if you go help somebody else get into their inheritance. Well, Salah, I'm going to say that one more time. Holy Spirit just spoke that to me. The only way that you will be able to live safely and enjoy your inheritance is if you're willing to go help other people obtain their inheritance. Because if you're not willing to help other people obtain their inheritance, then you'll eventually lose yours. Because the giants that they didn't conquer will come looking for you once he takes care of them. So this whole mindset, I'm just going to take care of me and my own, is short-lived. Let me say that one more time. This mindset of I'm just going to take care of me and my family or me and my wife or me and myself is short-lived. It's short-sighted. I liken it to people that want to sit around and draw unemployment, not thinking about a career, and just say, as long as they're going to give me extra money on unemployment, I ain't looking for a job. Let me say this. You're short-sighted, even if you're making an extra $100 a week. Because that extra stimulus is going to run out. And you're going to miss out on what you could have started building into. It's the same mindset. When we come in and say, I'm just going to take care of me and my family. That may work for a little while. But you'll eventually lose your inheritance because you didn't help somebody else fight for theirs. One thing I found is I give, and if I give and I serve, you know what happens? Then my inheritance gets more and more robust. I believe that with every fiber in me. The more I serve and the more I give, the bigger my inheritance gets. And it makes no sense. The more you give and the more you give away, the more you get. But that's the upside down kingdom, isn't it? The more I give and the more I give away. More serve. And so these 40,000 were securing their inheritance because, you know what? They were helping somebody else get theirs. One thing I have found, and I will close with this, one thing I have found is that everybody in life doesn't want the same thing that I want in life. And that's okay. because someday they may want more. Someday I may want more. When you say, what are you talking about, what you want out of life? I'm talking about the inheritance that God has for me. And please get off of materialism when you're thinking the inheritance. That is part of it. Me and Lori, man, we go through life saying, man, God, is this part of our inheritance? We're going to look at some land in a couple of weeks, you know, and we talked about it a couple of days ago. I said, man, let's go look. I said, you know what I said? I said, I just want to see what it feels like when we walk on that land to see if we feel like that's part of our inheritance that God's got for us. And if it is, then we'll know. I said, I just want to walk on it and just see what it feels like. No, I didn't say see how pretty it was. I didn't say this, or this. I didn't even say numbers or anything, because I know that if it's my inheritance, God will work numbers out. Why y'all all quiet on this stuff? Start living your life like that. God, I drive by laying around our house all the time asking God. I said, God, is this our part of our inheritance? If it is, make it happen in your timing. It might be 5 years from now. It might be part of our inheritance, but you know what? They might be the ones that walk into it. But getting back to everybody at this point in their life may not want what you want out of life. But are you willing to carry the presence for them anyway, Brett? See, here's one thing I found is everything's relative, because while there are a lot of people that don't want as much as I want in life, there are some people that want more in God than I want right now. You know what my responsibility is? Help those that don't want as much, and also help those that want more. This is a good word. Are y'all getting this? This is a good word this morning, guys. And I don't say that a lot on my preaching, but this is a good word this morning. Because I think I'm just hair on fire, you know, chasing after God and chasing after the fullness of life. And I say stuff in it, and I can tell people it don't hit them right, because they're like, well, who do they think they are and all of this stuff? Man, I'm not even living into a fraction of my potential yet and what he has for me and who I am in him. Everything's really, because I may think I'm hair on fire and doing awesome and chasing after this and all of that stuff and everything. And God's like, dude, I got people wanting to go into the deep inner places that you hadn't even scratched yet. So there's always a Caleb that says, I'm not going to settle for anything but that mountain. Y'all remember that? Y'all remember the story of Caleb? This cat's 80 years old. And he's coming in and they're dividing up inheritance. And he goes to Joshua and he said, whoa, wait a minute. Before you divvy everything up, he said, you remember 40 years ago what Moses promised me when we came back out of the original Kadesh Barnea trip? There was a mountain over there that I said was mine. It was my inheritance. I claimed it as my inheritance because something jumped inside my spirit when I saw that. And I looked past the giants, because there were giants that dwelt in this mountain. I looked past all of that stuff, and I said, I believe that's what God has for me. And so he come back, and he didn't forget for 40 years, and he told Joshua, he said, before you start divvying it up, that's mine. So there's always going to be a Caleb that wants a mountain that maybe I'm not willing to fight for at this point in my life, but you know what my responsibility is? I bet there were some people in his tribe. I can't even remember what tribe he was now, but I bet there were some people in his tribe was like, really? Come on, man. God, Caleb. That's awesome, but this plane over here is a lot easier. Can't we settle for that? We've had people that are no longer with us because they said, man, y'all try to set a bar too high. It's unrealistic, and I can't relate. I'm serious. We've had a lot of people through the years that have been on this journey with us, and they're no longer on this journey with us because they said, man, y'all were just unrealistic, and this bar is too high and all that. And I'm like, you're looking at the wrong standard, because the standard that I'm looking at is Jesus Christ and his glory and his fullness. And he says that can be mine. So that tells me that there is a high mountain for us to obtain that is our inheritance. So wrapping this up, getting back to how will we serve and how will we love and how will we give. See, I tied it in with last week's give, love, and serve. Am I willing to do it for those that are not wanting the same thing that I'm wanting in life? Tiff, are you willing to go to all the effort of heading up VBS again and say, you know what, it's worth it? You know what you're doing in being VBS director, Tiff? You're standing in the Jordan River so a bunch of kids can cross over on dry land. You are, absolutely. That's what you're doing. And everybody that helps volunteer and comes up here and serves is doing the same thing. Every one of you is doing the same thing. You're holding the presence of God so kids can pass. Because so they can know the goodness that you know. So quit thinking somebody's not carrying their load and I'm tired of carrying everybody else's weight. Let this mind be in you which was in Christ Jesus. Said he thought it not robbery to make himself equal with God, but yet he came as a servant. And he came to serve so we could pass. To me, that's the power of the memorials. It's way bigger than some rocks stacked up remembering something that God did and something God was going to do. It was a bunch of people that said, God, we believe you and we're going to chase after you. Have your way. Have your way. Have your way. So let's stand to our feet. We'll do our 1, 2, 3 break. Let this word today get real personal. We talked about 4 different people. We talked about priest carrying the presence so everybody else could pass. And they got to go last. Even Joshua got to go before. They got to go last. They were last ones. Last man out. Will you be that guy, Brett? We talked about 40,000 warriors that fought for somebody else. Will you guys be that person? We talked about Joshua that was willing to go it alone. Will we be that guy? Lindsay, will we be that guy? You know what, man? Don't nobody else got. I'm in. Because of what he's done in my life. Because of what he's got for me. And then we talked about 12 guys carrying a rock and being obedient and trusting that somebody else is going to take care of their stuff. Marty, I've told you this before. You know what the Lord told me years and years and years ago, and I've never forgot it, and I never will forget it, and I'll keep living by it. It's one reason I keep doing what I'm doing. He told me straight up. He said, you take care of my house and I'll take care of yours. You know what he was saying? You carry my rock and somebody will carry your stuff. You carry my rock and somebody will carry your stuff. I just want you to carry my rock. I just want you to carry my presence. I just want you to carry my goodness. I just want you to carry my love. So one thing, that's the single thing in life, guys, if we'll carry that. In Matthew, Jesus says, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and then all these things shall be added to you. Okay, so just learn to carry the rock well. Doesn't mean you're not excellent in other areas. Because you carry the rock well, you will be excellent in other areas. You'll be sharp in relationships. You'll be sharp in business. You'll be sharp in redeeming the planet. You'll be sharp in everything you do if you learn to carry the rock well. But we've got to learn to first carry the rock well. We think after we get our crap together, then we'll carry the rock, or stuff together, sorry. I'll get my junk together, and then I'll start carrying that rock well. No, learn to carry the rock well, and then your junk's going to come together. It'll amaze you how it will come together. All right? I know it's late. I'm sorry. I always lie when I say I'm going to be brief. I promise you I do my best. God knows my heart.